everybody. This is Bob Goodwin, and welcome to another episode of Career Club Live. If you're not familiar with Career Club, please check us out at career.club. We are offering a bunch of free resources for job seekers beginning in January, which we hope you will take advantage of, including a free career coaching call every Thursday at 1 o'clock Eastern. You can find a link to that on our website. So today I am very pleased to introduce our guest, Carrie Lynn Shaw, or KL. KL is a former head of HR for North America for BMW, as well as the head of HR for Coty, the beauty company, and then most recently at Global Brands International, as well as the Shade Store. KL has recently started a new company called The Salary Bump, and we're going to be talking a lot about compensation and things that you can be doing to increase your compensation and get paid what you deserve to be paid. So with that, KL, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Bob.
No, thanks so much for joining. So as I said in the beginning, you know, you started a new company, and we're going to get into that in just a minute. That's very exciting. But as we are wont to do, I would like to ask you just a handful of questions so people can kind of get to know you as a human being first. So easy one, where were you born and raised?
Love it. Thank you so much. I was born and raised in St. Albert, Alberta, Canada, a suburb of Edmonton. So minus 40 is an average winter day, hence the reason why I left in my early 20s. Not because of the location, but the cold was not mine. So I'm a sun seeker. I belong at the beach. I live in New York, but that's really where I belong.
Awesome. Very good. And then a little bit, where'd you go to school?
So I went to school in Alberta. So that was what you did. It's not like the US where you go away to college. You generally go to the university in your city. So University of Alberta, started studying special education, decided that wasn't the route for me. I ended up with a marketing degree and then went to the University of Maryland and got my MBA.
Oh, awesome. Go Terps. Come on. and then just a little bit about your family.
So I have a husband and an amazing Gen Z daughter who teaches me something every single day. I did an expat assignment in Germany and like to joke that I brought home a souvenir, my husband, and was a phenomenal experience in my life and life-changing really to be part of his family and learn another language and from a cultural sensitivity standpoint, it's also taught me a lot in really navigating someone whose English is not their first language.
Yep.
And how we argue. He likes to say that we should try to argue in German instead of English and see how I do. But I like to win. I'm a little bit competitive, so we generally speak English. But it's beautiful. Our daughter is studying to international business. She's a junior on her way to London to study at Westminster, and we couldn't be more proud.
And is she bilingual?
She is. She should practice it more. But when we lived in Germany, she picked it up very quickly.
That's what you were saying earlier before we went on air. That's one of the greatest gifts you can give your child is the opportunity to speak a second language. So that's cool.
Absolutely. She was my husband, we met him when she was six. So had we obviously met early on, and she would be bilingual, no question. But learning to integrate English really was the language that we chose. So
and now she can learn British English, and as I think it was Winston Churchill, but two people separated by a common language. So she'll learn another language when she's in London.
Absolutely. Whilst she's in London.
Whilst, yes. Amongst the British.
Hopefully not a British accent, because that would be awkward.
No. So I kind of breezed through because you've got some really great companies as part of your background. But when you got your graduate degree from Maryland, is that when you began your full work career? Or did you have an interlude between your undergrad and your graduate?
So I had a bit of a different start. So as I said, I was studying special ed and I quit school one semester shy of my degree. I was paying for my own school. I was selling cars actually to pay for college. So my parents really didn't say much about me quitting, but it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like this was the direction I wanted to go. Like most 20-year-olds or 21-year-olds, I'm not sure at that age how you really know what you want to do, but I knew that that was not the direction for me. Mm-hmm. So I ended up falling back into business. But in the meantime, I worked. And I worked since I was 14 years old. And I worked full time while I was in school regardless. So I actually preferred the work part than the school part. And fast forward, I started working corporate and I almost didn't get the job. It was with General Motors. And the gentleman that I met who asked me to send him his resume, which by the way is how I've gotten every job. I've never applied for one. He said, oh, I didn't realize you didn't have your degree. And I thought, oh, shoot, you know, this could actually block me from doing great things. So I immediately signed up to finish my degree. They put me through school and helped me pay for my MBA. So I actually did work. And, you know, when the door was closing, I pried it back open by saying, listen, you have an opportunity to mold me and shape me, and we can grow together working together. And they then hired me. So, yeah, it was a different approach for sure, but wouldn't change it for a thing.
I admire your pluck. Yeah, you know, it's like not taking no for an answer, which is really good, and kind of helping them see what the benefits would be. So, but you found your way into HR. How did that
total happen? Accident? So, as I said, I sold cars and loved automotive. So I spent over 20 years in the automotive industry, and sales was my jam. Sales and marketing, and I loved it. Any contest, I would win it, or my team would win it. It was always about the win for the company, but I was really intrigued by sales and marketing. So HR completely, I had honestly didn't even know how to spell it. I had zero connection to HR, maybe because it wasn't a modern HR that I was really interested in. Fast forward, I run a very modern HR. So it was an accident. Somebody said, we like your approach. We like your style. We like how you think. And we think you'd be great in this role. And it truly was one of the best things I've ever done. Was I always said yes to every opportunity anyway. But when I moved into HR, I also became a professional coach. And that was one of the three biggest transformations of my life. And I wouldn't want to go back into the business, because the HR seat, we actually get to touch every aspect of the business. We're one of the few roles besides the CEO that has depth and is required to have depth in every single business area. And I'm fascinated by human behavior. So it really was this beautiful journey that brought me to be a fractional CPO, but also, 3 decades of work brought me to launching the salary bump as well.
Yeah, just side note, we had Brad Warga on the podcast last year. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So Brad leads now the global HR practice, or co-leads it for Heidrick & Struggles. And, you know, when we had him on, one of the things he said is like getting people into HR who come from the business and not lifers in HR, but people that have lived different parts of the business bring a fresh perspective. And, you know, I think that you're a great example of that. We're going to get into your new adventure in just a second. But last question, when you are not starting a new business or being the HR executive or fractional HR executive, what do we find KL doing?
So I mentioned automotive. I'm a car junkie. But my real passion is riding motorcycles. So I ride a Harley.
Of course it is. I was going to guess riding motorcycles, right?
It's a little bit strange, right? I wouldn't expect it. But I'm a major fitness buff. So I'm working out a lot. I love to travel. And yeah, my husband and I found riding together was just something really interesting to do. It's not about speed, but it's the wind in your hair. And somehow there's a freedom that is wild. I didn't expect to love it so much, but yeah, I really, really enjoy it.
What kind of bike do you ride?
A Harley.
Of course. That's awesome. That's what I love about asking these icebreaker questions. It's like I'm learning all kinds of cool stuff about you that, you know, and people, as you say, are endlessly fascinating. So we don't ever want to take anything for granted. So you've had a very, very successful career as an HR executive with some really cool brands, but you've decided to strike out on your own. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, the what and the why of the salary bump?
Sure. So I evaluated, I guess it was 2016. I was in an environment that didn't match my values. And I realized, you know what, I need to take a break. I took 6 months off. I traveled to India. I did Ayurveda, which I now do every year, was the second biggest transformation of my life. And I really evaluated what is my purpose. And I wanted to understand what I was meant to do on this planet. And through a lot of meditation and some really interesting experiences, I recognized that helping people unlock their potential was what I do best. And I thought to myself, I never thought I would launch a company that wasn't really in the forefront of my mind. Becoming and continuing to grow as an HR executive was what I really loved. But I realized that people don't know what they don't know, especially around negotiation. And sitting in an HR seat, I really recognized the limited number of people that actually negotiate. And a part of that is not knowing your worth and really helping people to identify that they are worth it and they can ask and not to be afraid that the offer might get pulled. So I wanted to give people a little bit of a peek behind the HR curtain and give you the confidence and the tools to be able to ask what you're worth and earn the compensation that you deserve. And while it's not only about the money, it was never about the money for me. It really was about my growth and learning. And sadly, I used to say that in an interview. I mean, what was I thinking? But, you know, I always believed that if I did good work, the money would come. And to an extent, it did. So I don't want to misrepresent that. But I realized, like everybody else who's listening, you're leaving money on the table. And we all have financial goals. We have retirement goals. We have Bahamas homes. We have,
you know, sending kids to London for school. We have all kinds of stuff.
We have lots of financial goals. And there's no reason why we can't have it both. And so that was how the salary bump was born. And frankly, I've been doing it for 10 years. I just didn't want, monetize it. And people would tell me, everyone in my life, Kale, you should really do this for a living. And I was like, do I want to do it for a living? I don't know. And so it sort of just evolved. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to make a massive impact around the world.
How hard was it for you to walk from corporate, known income, known every, you know, I mean, a lot of good assets to, I'm going to jump off a cliff here and see what happens.
Scary as heck. So scary. And obviously still is on some level, right? Because I've been in corporate my whole career. I think I've made good financial decisions, which have allowed me to be able to say, okay, I'm going to take this leap. What I've created, I'm also really thoughtful about the investment. And yeah, I'm betting on myself. And I always have, I suppose. And so, you know, it's funny, I would ask my parents, why over the years have you never, ever given me advice? They've never given me advice, not once. Not did they question me when I quit school, moving to another country, nothing. And I, even when I've asked for advice, they won't give it to me. And they said, we've always just trusted that you will figure it out. And so I think based on that and knowing I've got a heck of a lot of grit, and I feel fairly unstoppable no matter what has been thrown my way in my life. I know I'll figure it out. And so that's how I'm approaching this. This is an opportunity for me to go all in. And at the end of the day, it's, you know, I have income as a fractional CPO. I can put weight on different things at different times based on where I'm at. But I really am sure that it's all going to fall into place as it's meant to.
No. So, and I'm sure it will too. I mean, you're obviously a master of the topic, which we're going to get into in a sec. So you said earlier, like, you know, people feel awkward about negotiating. And I don't know, is that a particularly American thing or not necessarily?
No, I think around the world, people are facing the same. So I have a lot of connections in Germany and help a lot of friends there. It's certainly socialized in terms of benefits are different. So it's a different conversation around benefits. But the big thing I see is people don't ask. They're afraid to ask. They don't know what they're worth. But what they also don't recognize is there's this whole plethora of items around the compensation package beyond salary that if they're not even asking for the salary, because we know those percentages are so low of people asking, we know they're not asking further on benefits packages, sign-on bonuses, cars, gas, all these other things. Yeah. Not one person in my entire career in HR, of the thousands of people that I have made offers to, has ever asked, tell me about the salary breakdown, or sorry, tell me about the benefits breakdown and the costs associated. So people think they're jumping to a new company and they're getting this great salary bump. But what they don't realize is that now this, it's going to get eaten away because their benefits are not as good. So there's very simple things.
For a second, I need to go plug in my computer real quick. I thought I had like 100% battery. Now it's like on zero.
Don't All go good. Away. No worries. I'm going to remind you to plug mine in too.
In 1 second.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Bob. Yeah, it's a really shocking, it's a shocking thing. But I think it's just people don't know what they don't know and that they can ask, you know?
It's okay. Okay, Kale, sorry about that.
All good.
I had to go grab my power thingo. I was on like 80% power when we started, and that quickly diminished. So.
Oh, good. No worries.
There we go. Now I'm not going to crash. The point that you were just making, and we're going to pick up right now, is, you know, the people getting focused on compensation or like the salary piece and not realizing it's all going to get eaten up in benefits, or, you know, that is such an important point that you're making. And I would love for you to help listeners understand how to get the employer to help articulate and quantify the value of the benefits. Because if one salary is $100,000, but the benefits package that they're being offered is, you know, worth $40,000, and somebody else is offering $110,000, but the benefits package is worth like $15,000. Like, how do they, you know, calculate this and get enough visibility to be able to do a calculation like that?
So companies will rarely give you that visibility up front, which I think should change. But that's, you know, maybe for later in the conversation. It's really about you equipping yourself with the information and the right questions to ask. And so this is part of what you will get in working with me, either through my online program or one-on-one with me. Yeah. And really, I list out all the different levers that you have to pull. So when you're talking salary, the first question that a recruiter or an HR person will ask you is, what are your salary expectations? After asking, tell me about yourself. But usually in that first meeting, they'll ask you that question, and you really need to be armed with what your current package is worth. So I recommend people list out their current package, all the different things that are included in that package, including what they're spending on healthcare benefits,
yep,
car bonus, etc., pension in some cases. So list all that and list the value. And that way, when you go to have the conversation and you do your homework on the salary piece of it, you know you have different layers that you need to add in, either in the base salary when you're talking about what your expectations are there. But I always recommend you answer the question with your market research. And the expectations, and based on similar roles that you've been interviewing for, this is the range. I also recommend never, ever to talk about a dollar amount. You always talk in ranges. And then you also say, and obviously there are different ancillary benefits that we would need to talk through so that, you know, we can do a side by side, but looking forward to hearing more as we go through this process.
Yeah.
So to sort of set that stage is very important. They're not going to do it for you. They're not really interested in paying you more than your but they budgeted or they think the role is worth. It's your job to come equipped with all that information to be able to ask. And then those levers really in the end become the negotiation, right? So then you can say, okay, well, let's talk about this. We didn't quite get there on the salary, but let's talk about some of the other benefits and how we can close that gap.
See, I mean, what I love about this is it's a very fact-based conversation. It's not emotional. It's not, you know, hey, what I want is, and say, well, this is my market value. Now, you're going to probably correct me in what I tell people sometimes is when somebody says, you know, what are your salary expectations? Do you think it's a fair question to say, well, do you mind sharing with me what the budget is that you've been given for this role?
100%. I would never answer that question.
Is that a legitimate question to ask back?
I would never answer that question without going back to the interviewer and say, you know, listen, be really curious what your budget is for the role, given we're in the early stages of this process, to start the conversation. I think it's helpful for you to share. Always go back, never divulge your information early. And if they come back with a range that's lower than you're expecting, then you can simply respond with, based on, you know, roles, similar roles on the market and recruiters that I've met with, it's a little low on the range. My expectations would be between X and X. Always being prepared, and you never want to be on the back foot of that question. And no, everyone will ask you that in the first interview. That's a very, very common question that they'll ask. So you want to be equipped to be able to respond, to put it back in their court and be able to respond appropriately and divulge what you're making currently. And to your point about taking the emotion out of it, doesn't have to be an ugly conversation or a conversation where people feel like if I'm asking for what I'm worth, I might come across greedy or, oh, you know, it's difficult times. There's a scarcity mindset. You know, at the end of the day, that's all stuff that you're putting in your head. And you want to go in with confidence and know that a negotiation can be a win-win.
And Kayle, this is why we get on so well, because you're exactly right. I mean, this should be confidence. It should be fact-based. It doesn't have to be emotional. It's about being prepared. It's about having an adult-to-adult conversation with somebody and not this parent-child, like, I'm so sorry to be, you know, asking for something. It's sort of like, well, how much do you want for your house? Well, what's the market value for my house? I mean, these are known things. We can kind of calculate this. Relatedly is when people say, well, Kayle, what are you making now? I'm like, well, kind of doesn't matter what I'm making now. If I'm making $1 million or $1, what is this role worth to you? And what's the market value for this role? That's the only germane thing to be talking about. I could be grossly over or undercompensated. That should not color this conversation.
Yeah, I don't see them asking so often what you're making, but people make the mistake of saying, to answer the question, what are your expectations? I currently make X.
And then they say, currently I'm making X,
Yeah, so you want to be in a position to be able to have done your homework and to really know what the role is worth. The mistake I see companies make, though, is they budget the role based on nothing. Maybe internal benchmark. They don't always go out and do their own market research, and their internal benchmark could be way off. So when you see a job posted in certain states, you're required to post what the role is, what the market value of the role is. Yep. Be mindful. That's not necessarily a market value. That could be a budgeted value. I don't see companies, in my experience, doing their homework on what the market value really is. They post quick, we need to fill this role. Here's what the last person was making. Boom.
That's right.
So for a company to really get it right, it's to do a full-blown audit inside the organization against external research to see what the roles are really worth out there. And are they paying people appropriately? And also, are they expressing to their people what their whole package is worth? Because that's where people might feel undervalued in their current role. But if you don't show them what the whole package is worth, you're missing a big opportunity as well as a company.
Well, see, and back to kind of our point, I think, you know, even if the salary is kind of lower, the total compensation package, which is different, tell me if you agree with this, that's even different than OTE. So on target earnings tends to be, right, salary plus bonus or salary plus commission or like whatever the variable component of the compensation plan is. And people would talk about, well, the OTE for this role is $200,000.
Yeah.
But that's still not taking into account all the benefits and how much you'd be paying for health insurance. What's the deductible on that? What's the 401k look like? What's the match? You know, is there a pension? Like there's just, you know, so many other things that go, and it's all real money.
Yeah. Same with PTO. I mean, there's another or flexible work or tuition reimbursement or childcare or transportation. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And those are real out-of-pocket costs that are costing you every month. So, I mean, I'll give you an example. My two most recent clients, I helped an old CEO with a multi-million dollar package. Transportation is, you know, included in some of these. There's airplanes or train, you know, cars or drivers. But I just helped an automotive technician who received his top level certification, and he was making $100,000, an hourly worker. And with this top level certification, the interesting part around technicians is the turnover is 50%. So dealers have a really hard time finding and grooming and developing automotive technicians. And so when you have a certification this high, you become a hot commodity on the market. And so other manufacturers are giving him a call. He loves where he is. He did not want to move. He loves the culture. He loves the environment. And he said, but I want to be paid what I'm worth. What do you think? So we worked it out and he got a $50,000 raise. And that was through multiple channels. So we got created on a hybrid approach from equity in the company, equity in his work, plus an increased hourly rate. But, you know, that he was putting in the effort, he was also gaining more from the effort and his output. We also got company car in there. We got healthcare in there. We got gas fuel included. We got really creative with his package and sort of loaded the lips of his manager to be able to go and talk to his leadership about, let's get creative with this person because we don't want to lose him and he doesn't want to leave us. So, you know, there's a certain capacity. And then the last thing we added in was an additional 2 weeks of PTO, which as an hourly person also is actual real money. So there are so many different things. And I think one of the things I like to recommend to people is focus on what you value. So time off was always something I valued greatly. Flexibility to work from wherever in the world I want to be was something that also I really valued. So I always ask people to look inside and really figure out what are the things that are most important to you. It's not a compromise of one or the other. The salary should definitely always be there. But then you've got some play with things that really matter to you.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that because, you know, when our clients at Career Club are, you know, having these same kinds of conversations. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of variables that come into this, like commute. Do you even care what this company does? Are you going to have the opportunity to grow in your career? Like, does it fit your life, not just, you know, one aspect of your bank account? And so, as you say, kind of like, you know, what do you value? That's really the compensation, is does it allow you to maximize the things that you value? And then how do you articulate those?
And as I said before, I mean, money was never my number one driver. I made the mistake of actually thinking it was one or the other in my early days. And now I recognize that you can and should have both. You can have money, the salary, without it coming across in a negative way. And I can have all the other things that I want as well. And that's where you have the secret sauce and the magic happens when you work for a company that all of it falls into place.
I don't know if this is giving away your secret sauce or not, so you can, you know, stop me. But when I'm trying to research my value, you know, I know a site like salary.com or Glassdoor or something similar. I mean, are those legitimate sources in your mind for just, you know, somebody, just a regular person out there trying to figure out what they're worth? Would those be good sources to go to?
There are many good sources out there, Bob. And in my online course, I give you a few options. But with AI, it's changing every day. So I think what I always recommend is to look at a few different sources and also not just look online, but look within your network and talk to people about what they're worth. So in this technician's example, he talked to a few technicians who were in his master class that worked for different manufacturers and different dealerships. And that was another really helpful way for us to look at it. The you know, when I talk to my clients in different countries, it's different because they don't necessarily all have access to that. So talking with friends in your network, your colleagues, your neighbors, you know, you don't have to ask them directly what they make, but you could ask something like, you know, what does a VP in your organization make, or what does a director level in your organization make? I think you can kind of look at your own trajectory and get a little bit of a picture. You can also talk to HR in your current company, and you can ask, where do I fall on the range of this role? What does the next level look like? What is the range for that level? How can I continue to grow inside the company? So there are other things that you can do in other ways that are not just looking at ChatGPT has a tool, a salary accelerator tool. PayScale is a good one. There's a lot of options out there for you to put together your business case. And just remember, though, it's pure salary is what you're getting back. You're not looking at all the other benefits. And again, those all add up in a significant way.
Right. In a very, very, and in a compounding way too, right? So if I forego, you're getting like $20,000 right now, all my future raises and any other benchmarking against my comp, you know, is, you know, either based on that number or not based on that number. So being able to get it sooner is always better, right?
100%. Well, look, Forbes has a lot of people, I think, ground themselves to this statistic, but they've done a study where if you job hop every couple of years, you will make more than 50% of someone who stays loyal with a company. Now, that's not to say that you can't grow inside your organization, but it's a little bit more challenging to do it. It's actually one of my secret sauces, if you will. I really focus on if people love where they are, they value where they are, helping them to get the salary that they deserve in their existing role or get promoted inside their company. So that's another angle that I think, if you approach it in the right way at the right time, it can be pretty significant.
So when we're working with clients and, you know, they're coming to the finish line, they're so excited that, you know, company X is making them an offer, about to make them an offer. And you alluded to this early on, but they don't want to screw it up. Now they're afraid of like, oh my gosh, I do not want to pop the bubble here because like I'm almost home and I don't want to screw it up by looking like a pig.
Yeah.
How do you get people over that anxiety?
So look, we focus on confidence and asking appropriately. I like to have people and loading their lips to have this conversation, to even just say, listen, I'm really excited about this opportunity and I'm so grateful for the chance to work inside your organization and be part of this great team. Knowing now we're at the stage of negotiation, I know you want to make it a win-win as much as I do. So let's talk about what that looks like. You know, early on, we talked about the salary and my expectations based on other interviews I've had and the market research I've done. So let's start there and let's see how we can close the gap. And then we can talk about all the ancillary benefits, because often what happens when you get an offer, they will give you, here's a salary and the bonus.
Yes.
All the other stuff is not part of that conversation. And so you want to make sure you're adding that there. So before you say at the end of that conversation, give me 72 or 48 or 72 hours to take some consideration time, you've already planted a lot of those seeds. So they're able to then go back to their leadership and have further conversations. She's expecting dot, 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 dot. We need to be ready with a richer offer.
And I think too, you know, kind of emotionally, the employer, you know, wants to get this going too. I mean, there's a reason they're hiring you. There's work to be done. And they're, you know, there's kind of that decision fatigue of like, hey, we finally made a decision. I'm ready to start thinking about the next thing. Fine, another 10th, whatever. Yes, let's just get them on board. Right?
They want you, Bob, as much as you want them. And I'll tell you also, every single HR person, and I will repeat, every one of them expects you to negotiate. So we're shocked when you don't. And you are leaving money on the table if you don't. And one of the other really important things to think about when you're going back and you ask for X or you ask for range is to stop talking. Silence is actually working for you and let them respond. So when you say, my expectation was between blah, 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 you stop talking. And silence is really a magical thing in that case. So yeah, no, it's always been amazing to me. And I've never ever once pulled an offer. And I can bet if you talk to 100 HR people, maybe one would say they pulled an offer. And the only reason you would do that is if somebody behaved really inappropriately or aggressive or something that just was rude. Right. It is very, very unusual. And again, when you talk about it with energy and you talk about how excited you are about the opportunity and making it a win-win, you're setting the stage for really what can be a beautiful conversation, and also shows your confidence. When you negotiate, if you're negotiating with them, that means you're going to negotiate effectively with partners inside the organization. That means you're showing your leadership and your confidence to walk in to have a proper conversation. It means you're not afraid to have hard conversations. So there's all sorts of good stuff that comes out of that as well that really works for you.
That is such a great point, Kay. I've never heard anybody make that point before, but you're right. You're sort of behaviorally interviewing. How will you represent the company? How you look after our best interests in a professional but direct way, which 100%. Is really, really cool. So what is the easiest ask that people don't ask for?
Well, as I said, they're not asking for anything. In my experience, less than 15% of people negotiate. Statistically,
at all.
Statistically, if you can research it, it's 50%. And for women, it's 34%. And even lower for people of color. So step one is just ask. Yeah. It's underrated. Just ask. And I would say do your homework. Make sure you're going in prepared to have this conversation. Because if you haven't done your research, you're going to stumble on that question. Yeah. And I think, one of the things I always like to say, and again, it's not just about the salary bump. It's not just about the money. It's you're interviewing this company as much as they're interviewing you. Mm-hmm. And another shocking thing that I always found was that people don't ask the interviewer questions. So in my program, I give you a list of really important questions to ask because you want to know the kind of culture you're walking into. You want to know that this is a real match for you and that you could be protecting yourself from something that, might not work out in the end. And I've made that mistake in my career saying, yes, I was just so excited about an opportunity. I definitely didn't negotiate and nor did I ask the right questions. And, that values mismatch came out pretty clearly. Yeah. And I had to leave. Right. So.
No. And that's such a great point too, because, I've not run two jobs before. Sometimes I've been running from a job and, so I'm just looking to get out of there more than I'm actually looking to go to that. And that would obviously lend itself to not being a great match, not negotiating, because look, as long as you can get me out of jail, I'm happy with whatever it is, which is obviously a mistake. The thing, and we're in, becoming more challenging economic times. The labor market is different. It feels like it's swinging back to a bit more of an employer's market. And, I was on the phone this morning with somebody like, hey, my phone was ringing off the hook a year ago. It ain't ringing off the hook anymore. And so there is this sense of a bird in the hand, kind of a mentality. And that I think that there is a reluctance of kind of messing up something. And so what I appreciate about what you're saying is that's all fair and true and fine. It doesn't change the dynamic of you should be getting paid what you're worth. And one of the main reasons you're not is you're not doing A, the research, and then B, asking for what you're worth based on your research. Yeah. And anybody can do this.
Anybody can do this. And just not enough people are. Look, you're always going to hear how tough the market is, how bad the market is, how scarce the market is, how change is so hard. I just wrote a LinkedIn post about it. But what if it wasn't? What if change wasn't hard? What if there is abundance? What if there is, you know, tons of opportunities to go around. I think you just had Melissa Grabner on your podcast, and she's awesome. I love her, by the way. One of the things that she talked about was networking. And I mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation. I've only ever applied for one role in my entire career, and the rest all came from my network. Sometimes me raising a hand, sometimes them saying, hey, we saw you in this project, we want you on this team. All of it came from my network. All of it came from the impression that I left wherever I was and fostering relationships that really made a huge difference in my career. And when someone says they want to help you, they mean it. And not yes. to apologize. You mentioned it in the podcast. Oh, I'm so sorry, Bob. I know you're really busy. If I hear one more person say that, I wouldn't be on the call with you if I didn't want to be here. No, right. I'm not too busy to have this conversation. That's why I'm here. Let's like maximize it. Don't apologize for it. Well, the one thing I will say is show gratitude. I find this to be also really underrated. And the amount of people that you help or I help that don't say thank you, it's a miss. So show gratitude each and every day. And once a year, for all the people who have touched you or mentored you or coached you or guided you or lent a hand to you in that year at Thanksgiving, it's a beautiful time to show gratitude. Send them an email and thank them for just being in your life and for the efforts that they gave you. It goes so far, you will have no idea, because then when you do need that person, you're not just calling because you need them. Check in every once in a while. And if somebody has mentored you, I want to hear how you're doing. Did it work? Didn't it work? You know, where are you at? That it goes a long way. So I think it's just a nice...
The interesting thing, because, you know, like I love networking. I love connecting people. That's probably my favorite thing to do. It's like, oh, you're going to love her. She's amazing. And like, I just enjoy doing that. And I think that with networking, sometimes people think that it's manipulative, right? And that I'm just trying to use you to get to something. And I suppose there are people that is actually their aim. They're just trying to stepping stone you to get to the next person. But when it's done right, you know, it's not manipulative. It's just it's sowing and reaping is a thing. If you plant, you will reap. That's not manipulative. That's just the way things work. And if I plant good seeds and I plant gratitude, if I plant, you know, intentionality to want to help, and you just do that as just part of a lifestyle, then what ends up happening is on another day, as you say, like that starts to bear fruit. And the other metaphor I use for this is like an ATM. Like if you make deposits, you can make withdrawals. But if you haven't been making deposits in other people's lives, and all of a sudden you just got laid off or something's going on, like you can't go to the ATM and press the button hard enough to make money come out. That's just overdrawn. Like you can't do that. Yeah. And so, you know, it's, you know, Dori Clark, we had her on the podcast, and she talks about, she wrote a whole book called Playing the Long Game. And it's the beautiful thing about the long game is it's all done in the right spirit.
Yeah.
That it's trying to help other people and you're to sort of foster goodness. And when you do that, the amazing thing is it reflects back onto you.
Yeah. You pay it forward. It's a good karma. It's just, you know, you do good things, you treat people well, it will always come back to you or someone else in your life, or you just never know. And that's not why you do it, but...
that's what I'm saying. It's not why you do it. It's just the natural result of doing it.
Yeah.
Kind of in the closing minutes, is there anything... I want to talk about innovation in just a second. Is there anything else just sort of generally, whether you were speaking to a candidate or speaking to a fellow HR professional, that you'd want to sort of add on to with our conversation so far on compensation?
I think we've covered it, Bob. I mean, there's other elements, of course. You know, we didn't talk about how you build the confidence to ask, how you know your worth, but I think doing your homework, putting the facts together, trying to take the emotion out of it. These are all things that anybody can do. And we can obviously talk about that further. And if you follow me on LinkedIn, I post a lot. I post every day and giving a lot of free tidbits and tools to help you with that. So I think we've covered it.
And in terms of innovation, I mean, nothing stands still. You talked about changes, like embrace change. Well, what are some of the innovations either that you're seeing or that you would like to see in sort of the wacky world of compensation?
I'd like to see, and this is some of the work I do as a fractional, I'd like to see companies actually drive the conversation around comp philosophy and really understand how that can work for them inside the organization. So I think it's a bit of an unknown. Most companies don't share what their philosophy is. Many of the companies don't even have one. Let's be real.
I was going to say, you can't share what you don't have.
Yeah, they don't have one, and they haven't found a way to connect the dots between transparency around pay, around talking about that full package and helping people understand how valued they are. And that goes beyond just salary. If you leave it to chance, people will make up stories in their head about not feeling valued, not being recognized. They don't know how they can grow inside the organization. They don't know how they can get promoted inside. They don't know how they can develop their careers. So there's a real miss and a big opportunity for companies to do this, especially because it's now being required by law. So get ahead of it. Really get ahead of it. I'm actually working with some Canadian companies. A couple of provinces have now got the laws to talk post pay transparency. And for those that don't, it's coming. So every other state in the US and every other province in Canada should just get ahead of it and actually use this as an employer of choice opportunity that We have transparency around these things. And by the way, many of them have transparency as a value, but you're not valuing transparency around compensation. So it's not connecting. There's a beautiful way to have the conversation without fear that, oh, if we tell people, then they're just going to want more. It's not the case. One of the things I do in every head of HR role I've ever taken is I do an audit and an equity analysis and make sure that we're paying people appropriately at different levels, different diversity categories, and really being sure that we are positioned right for success in the long run. And usually when I show the leader the retention turnover numbers and what that's costing them, it's a no-brainer to make the adjustments that are needed on the internal side and talk to people about why we're doing that, because we value you. And we value that you're part of our organization and the most important part of it. So I'm most excited about leaders paying more attention to the talent agenda and putting different demands on our leaders to be better leaders.
Well, I think that, you know, one on just transparency, Gen Z is much, much, much more open about pay transparency. Like, you know, my generation, I won't then impute that onto you, but, you know, it's like, that's something that you didn't talk about. That was sort of a sex religion kind of a conversation. Like, we don't talk about that. Yeah. And Gen Z's like, I don't care. Like, yeah, this is what I make. And so I think that as we see some of this generational transition, it's like, just, that's a value for them that it will inevitably make itself in. I love how you said kind of basically the employer branding. Use this as the opportunity, one, to demonstrate this value that you're claiming and be an employer of choice. Use it as a differentiator and let the laggards be laggards and you be a leader in stuff like this. And, you know, as somebody who represents talent, like, this is the kind of stuff that people flock to. This is what they're looking for. Yeah. And they're just not finding it nearly often enough. And to the extent it has to be legislated, you kind of lose all the credit for it. It's like, well, you did it because you had to do it, not because you wanted to do it.
Well, and again, there's also some big misses for the law that is requiring, because you might be posting on the outside what the range is and you haven't done the internal research. So guess what? The person who's sitting in that role who now sees what you've just posted online, it does not match where they are. How happy are they? Exactly. So there's a massive, like, you have to think about both. And I see it as a real advantage. I agree. And coming back to Gen Z, I mentioned it earlier with, I have a Gen Z daughter who blows my mind every day on the kinds of topics that she talks about and her friends talk about, mental health, and the confidence that they have to just ask. Like, it's just, it's mind blowing. I wrote a post on LinkedIn about it, and actually it went completely viral. It was around my Gen Z daughter who asked for a pay bump. Never even talked to me. I own the salary bump.
Well, this is generational, not asking parents for advice.
Hey, there you go. She fought, almost like unionized the dog kennel that she worked at, and got everybody a raise because someone came in at a higher amount. And she was like, that's unacceptable. I've been here a year. These people have been here X amount of time, and we all deserve a raise. And she got them all a raise, but she ended up quitting because she didn't feel valued. I just thought, wow. At 17, she was 17 at the time. How? It's mind blowing. It really is. Yeah. So, and look, at the end of the day, she just asked, you know?
Well, but also, again, and I think this is one of the key takeaways. You talk about confidence, and it's probably the third or fourth time you've used the word confidence. Yeah. It's one that we use a lot at Career Club, in terms of people understanding their unique value proposition that they're bringing to an employer. And confidence is not arrogance or cockiness. Those are not the same thing. Yeah. Confidence is rooted in convictions. It's rooted in fact, right? So that it's has a real basis for why I'm confident. And I think that in your career, and then now here with Salary Bump, as you're helping folks understand what their real value is, that they should be more confident. Even when we talk to people about when you're interviewing and you're confident, you sit up straighter, you lean into the conversation, your eyes are more open, you smile, you modulate differently. And what we say is, and the beautiful thing about confidence is it's contagious. When you believe, you make me believe. And so it just all works to the good. Compensation, you're trading your skill, your time, your life in some ways for some remuneration. You should be getting paid what you're worth. And if, would you say 15% of people actually negotiate?
In the thousands that I have offered, yeah. 15%. Statistically, it's around 50%, which is still way too low. For women, it's only 34%. It's way too low. It's absolutely too low. And I think the one thing that I would close with is, if you knew that everyone on the other end who's making you an offer is expecting you to negotiate, the door is already open. So it's not as if, you know, that's not happening. So the door is open, walk through it. It can't hurt to ask. Yep. What's the worst that can happen? They can say no. Best case scenario is you get everything you dreamed of and more. And that's ultimately.
Well, I can't think of a better note to end on than getting everything you dreamed of and more. So, Kayal, if people want to learn more about the Salary Bump, how do they do that?
They can follow me. You can follow me on LinkedIn, Carrie Lynn Shaw. The Salary Bump page is there. You can follow me on Instagram, my website. Everything is the Salary Bump. So TikTok, Instagram, and my website.
Awesome. And we will make sure that those are in the show notes and that we've got links for people to be able to click on. It's been an absolute pleasure. We've gotten to know each other over the years. And I was very excited about this episode because, you know, you're just such a good human being, but you're bringing very tangible, life-changing benefits to people. One is the mentality, back on the confidence. But then two is, as you say, people have financial goals, not just because I want more money, but because money allows me to invest in the things that are important to me. Yes. And that's a good thing. That's just an inherently good thing. So thank you.
Thank you, Bob. It was a pleasure.
Okay, everyone, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your day today to either watch this on YouTube or listen to this on your favorite podcast platform. In either event, if you wouldn't mind subscribing, rating, and reviewing, it really does help. And we wish you the best in 2024. And if you haven't negotiated your compensation, you should. If you don't know how, go to thesalarybump.com and KL will help you get to where you need to be. Okay. So with that, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob. I know you're